Sasfin Wealth is now Otto 1890. Imagine Johannesburg, 1890, a young city, alive with ambition. People arrive from everywhere, drawn by gold, and among them, a young man, Otto Pollack. 17, he becomes one of the first members of the JSE, not just trading shares, but building something that lasts. Today, Sasfin Wealth returns to its roots. Today, we are Otto 1890, and we are investment specialists, crafted for over a century, built for what's next. Visit otto1890.com to find out more. Various entities within Otto 1890 are FSPs.
The Money Show, how I make my money.
22 minutes now to 8 the time. Well, have you ever wondered why it is that you prefer one particular retail chain over another? I mean, I don't know if you've done the research and looked at everything they sell, or if you just feel better in one, or you don't like the color, or you just don't feel as comfortable going into another one. The secret of this is actually loyalty. And what makes you feel this way or that way is very much a science nowadays. I think there might be some art in it as well. Someone who's made their living, their career out of this, in this kind of science, is Amanda Cromhote. She's the founder and CEO of the organization called Truth. Amanda, good evening. Thanks so much for agreeing to spend half an hour with us tonight.
Hi, Stephen. Nice to be with you.
You talk about loyalty, and I mean, in my head, I'm thinking a frequent shopper program, a card, a discount on this, or whatever. You will have a very different understanding to me about this. How would you define loyalty in the kind of commercial sense to get people to come and spend money in your store?
Well, I think you're right in the sense of, as a consumer, that's exactly what you think of. Like, what is this going to do for me? Shall I swipe my card? Is it worth it? And at the end of the day, all the brands that we work with in the loyalty industry have to make sure that that's the first and foremost criteria to make sure that customers are happy and that it's worthwhile for them. Because if it makes sense for their business but doesn't make sense for the customer, then ultimately it's not going to survive. So we spend a lot of our time helping our the brands in South Africa or around the world who we assist in loyalty programs and so forth, getting the balance right between what is fabulous for the consumer, what's going to make a difference for the consumer, and also then equally what is commercially viable for the brands who are operating these loyalty programs. Because if one is great for the consumer but actually is sinking the brand, it's not going to last. But if it's great for the brand and not good for the consumer, it's equally not going to last. So it's a balance. And I think that's where you said the science and the soul. It's very scientific from a economic point of view, from a mathematical return on investment point of view, but it's also there is a soul to it in terms of, is this going to work? Is the consumer going to like this? Is it going to really make a difference versus the competitors? Because virtually every brand out there now has a loyalty program of sorts. So you have to differentiate somehow. And that's a little bit of the soul coming through. So it's very scientific though. Not to let that loose.
I'm going to come back to that because I find that interesting, but I do want to just focus on the soul for a second. I mean, what is the soul? I mean, you look at a retail chain and you think it doesn't have soul, and yet people walk into it, speak to the workers, interact with people, kind of know where the sweet counter is, and I think they come out of that shopping experience. They do come out of it moved in some way. I mean, shopping has become so much less frustrating than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've had the luxury of working as a retailer within the retail industry. And I always, I've heard the best retailers in the world refer to the retail industry as science and soul. And I think that's exactly right. There's a very scientific approach to merchandising and pricing and so forth. But there's the soul of a retailer. So I had the privilege of working for Woolworths South Africa for three years. And we used to, Simon Sussman was the CEO at the time, and he used to talk about the soul of retailing, like the smell of the strawberries or the feel of the fabric in women's fashion and so on. And it's true, right? Like if you smell a beautiful strawberry in the grocery store, you're more likely to say, I want that, rather than just if it's based on price and more scientific methods. So, and a lot of the work that we do at Truth is working with brands around the world, and I've just had the privilege of working, not working so much so, but visiting a retailer in Australia who really excelled at the soul of getting close to their customers and making them, getting their customers to love, love, love their brand. And that's something that, just data alone or scientific analysis can't create. There's a soul behind that approach without doubt.
It's so interesting to sort of think about how it works, because I sometimes wonder, can a brand with a soul make a mistake that affects the soul but not the science? And I'll give you an example. There is a particular British chef that I cannot stand. I haven't been able to stand him. I couldn't stand Jamie Oliver when I lived in the UK 30 years ago. I can't stand him now. Now, I might be the only one, but I think, frankly, that's a huge mistake. And sending me a WhatsApp thing with him actually saying my name before hitting the drums. I tell you what I wanted to do with the drumsticks, Amanda. But can you get the soul wrong?
Yeah, no, you're making me laugh because that's a good example of where you're picking up on the soul, but I pick up on the science, because the science of that is very much that they pick up on how loyal you are to the brand, and that we're talking about the famous Checkers 6060 and their Simple Truth brand. And they've used that campaign very cleverly from a science point of view, in terms of understanding what I shop and talking to me about what I shop. And I am a Simple Truth, I do buy the Simple Truth brand. So they're getting it right from a science point of view without question. Here in your case, maybe they're just unlucky that you don't like Jamie Oliver. But you're right, that's a brand preference, but that is a soul. And if it completely missed the mark for you. But for me, that's a great example of a scientific approach, but the execution maybe has missed the mark for some consumers. And how they would predict that, I've no idea. I don't know why you don't like him, but that's your personal soul,
Oh, there's
right?
a long list of reasons, but we don't need to go into that now. I mean, I'm sure he's perfectly nice. To do all of this, to make it work, to make the science work, you would need to have data. And I would imagine a ton of it. And you would need to know who your shoppers are. You would need to know how they came across you. They would need to know if they grew up coming to your stores. I mean, if you look at our big retailers, most of them will have customers who grew up going to them in some way. You need to know who you're aiming for. The data must be key to the whole thing.
It is, of course, but I'll correct you maybe on one thing, is you actually don't need heaps and heaps of data. So obviously a national retailer like a Woolworths or a Checkers or one of the big retail banks and so forth, they have gargantuan amounts of data and do amazing things with it, with permission obviously from the customer. And that's the best news, is in the last 5 years or more globally, but also here in South Africa, the legislation really does protect the consumer. So it's if they're not, then they're absolutely in complete breach. But it's not just the big boys that can use the data effectively. We're starting to see and help brands that are tiny organizations that may just be a corner florist, for example. They can collect data very simply from, whether it's signing up for email receipts, whether it's signing up for a newsletter, and can effectively as well, hopefully, change how customers feel about their brand because they're starting to create this relationship. But obviously, with the big global players or the big national players, they are collecting rows and rows and rows and rows of data against millions and millions of customers. And we've seen the South African loyalty players be recognized globally for the work they're doing in loyalty and with the use of their data. So brands such as F&B eBucks, TFG, ShopRite, they've all been recognized globally for the work they're doing. And that doesn't just come because they're good brands and they sell nice merchandise. To be recognized on the global stage for their data analytics capability, they're doing so responsibly, so the consumer is always protected, and so they're adding value to the customer's life. And obviously then a commercial return for themselves. And that's what I started off by saying. It's got to have almost like a seesaw effect, that it's got to be a balanced seesaw, that the consumer benefits whilst the brand benefits. It can't be heavily weighted one against the other. Otherwise, it has no sustainability.
When you're trying to start one of these systems, let me go back a little bit. to get the customer loyalty, does it all boil down to price in the end? So, I mean, if you look at the two big pharmaceutical chains that we have, they both have massive loyalty programs. Does it boil down to who is getting their goods for cheaper at the end, or is there more to it than that? Is that like the be all and end all? Is it just one of the factors?
Stephen, I think you're raising a very good point here around price sensitivity and the role loyalty plays. So we issue every year an annual white paper for South Africa. It's called the Truth and Brand Map White Paper. It's based off data that is called a Brand Map Study. And we're literally writing now and creating the new white paper for 2026. So in 2025's white paper, we saw the emergence of the power of loyalty to help the consumer get through month end. So there were three main concerns raised in this data by the South African consumer, saying my biggest concerns in life are one, crime, corruption, and money. I don't have enough money, cost of living. So the third reason people stay awake at night was cost of living. And then this study asked, well, what helps you get through the cost of living crisis? And they said, number one, I cut back on clothing spend. Number two, I cut back on going out to restaurants. And number three, I use loyalty programs. So loyalty programs have become not so much a luxury or a sort of add-on to how consumers survive, but part of their everyday method of shopping and making ends meet. So the data last year was 82% of South Africans use loyalty programs. And that's not just 82% might think about it, 82% might have a loyalty card, but 82% actively use loyalty programs. And without giving away the data for this year's white paper, that number definitely hasn't gone down, is all I can say at this stage. So South Africans is one of the most mature markets in the world. And the South African consumer is one of the most engaged consumer in loyalty programs, probably because they need it. And also it's a combination of needing it and wanting it and enjoying it. But the needing it is a real big thing here. We do see that globally as well, but we see it a lot more here. And I've done interviews with Clicks or FNB eBucks, Clicks Club Card, FNB eBucks, who all confirm the same. They can see how consumers are using their points, whether it's Capitec, whether it's eBucks, whether it's Clicks, whether it's Discam, all of the big loyalty players. They can all see by the way customers are using it that it's helping them make ends meet. I mean, Clicks gave Dr. Melanie Van Roy gave a wonderful example of how maybe a decade ago, customers used to use their Clicks Club Card points on luxuries like perfume or lipstick or, you know, a treat, whereas now it's being used on basics like soap or toothpaste or toilet roll. So there's a shift, and that's what we see in the data, you know. Mm. And eBucks, I've got on record an interview I did with FNB eBucks where they say, you know, that our redemption rate is one of the highest. It's definitely one of the highest in South Africa. Like over 90% of all eBucks issued are used, and that's enormously high. Mm. And a lot of the time, it's on essentials like utilities or just getting through month end.
Sure. Speaking to Amanda Kromhout tonight, founder and CEO of Truth on How I Make My Money, expert in consumer loyalty. Amanda, I have a couple of questions about the level of engagement that you talk about and how engaged South Africans are with loyalty programs. Are there differences along gender lines? Do you find one side? Are women more engaged by men? There, I've spat out what I'm really asking.
I love it. If you'd asked me 4 years ago, I'd have said absolutely. And I think the predictable answer would have been female shoppers or consumers are more engaged in using loyalty programs more. But the very interesting thing is now it's either the same or just marginally different. And we saw that shift after COVID. So during COVID, I think with the balance of folks working from home and then probably more of a balance of the everyday chores like buying groceries or popping out to buy nappies or whatever, we saw the shift change and male consumers becoming much more engaged. So female consumers didn't drop their engagement, but male consumers have caught up. We do see a slight difference if you take it category by category. So typically, fashion shopping is more female loyalty, dominated by females in the loyalty engagement, or fuel purchases and retail banking is more male consumers are engaged. But if you take overall in across all South African loyalty programs, South African consumers is pretty much like for like. In an age, if you look at age differences, we see a younger consumer, by younger we say between 18 and 25. They are very much less engaged, and I think it's a reflection of their ability to spend. You know, they're either just starting out in life, or they're still students or unemployed, so they have less disposable income, less need of using loyalty programs. But that catches up. We're not seeing that gap get bigger every year, but we're not seeing them catch up to the average South African consumer.
You talk, I mean, I know you speak internationally and you've spoken to many places and very big events too. Are our consumer programs different to what happens in other countries? I mean, I would think the Americans must have sort of built this. I mean, maybe they didn't, I have no idea, but that's just my presumption. I mean, are our programs different to other places?
So I'm going to absolutely correct you there. So we are one of, I really am saying this without any bias, and I'm originally I'm British, so I'm originally from the UK. So I love the South African market, not just because I love living here, but because I feel that this market is very advanced and mature in the loyalty industry. Now, why is that? It wasn't necessarily, I'd say 10 years ago, I'd say it was still catching up to do, but there's been this huge explosion. And there's no way, you know, if I look at just from my experience and talking to brands and working with brands around the world and then working with the South African brands, we are most definitely one of the best markets. But that is also proven by, I'm a judge on the International Loyalty Awards. I'm also the chair of the South African and African Loyalty Awards. And we see the South African brands on the global stage outperforming the other countries, so other retailers, other financial services brands. So it's not just me saying it, it's not just a bias. There's a judging panel of, I think there's about 30 judges, of which I'm one of them, on the International Awards. And last year, the South African brands, as a country, we took home more awards than anywhere else, USA, UK, and so on. Now, there's still elements where I feel we could catch up in terms of delivery in the marketplace. But if I look at what some of the brands are doing, and some of them we've mentioned already tonight, they are definitely ahead or on a par with international progress.
Amanda, we've got literally 30 seconds, which is going to be unfair because I kind of wonder how this is going to evolve from here. It gets hugely competitive. There was an important report out, I think it was from Consumer Intelligence a couple of weeks ago, suggesting that this was, in some cases, erring on the wrong side. The balance was wrong. It was costing companies too much money. It's only going to get more intense.
I think so. But I think brands will get smarter at doing it better, quicker, lower cost, and better return for customers, hopefully. At the end of the day, it's got to be good for the customer. Otherwise, maybe consumer intelligence is onto something. But I think the brands will outsmart that. And with the use of AI, with the use of data and personalization, we'll get it right.
Amanda, I've thoroughly enjoyed talking to you. I found that really very interesting. Thank you very much indeed. Amanda Kromhout is the founder and CEO of Truth. The next time you feel loyalty to a brand, you can blame her.